marbles over here.
Zach, can you see the marbles? Hold them up. I'll just use this one in the meantime.
Good morning. I want to repeat something that I told a group that was in here during the class period in case you didn't hear it. And that is that just repeatedly before my coming here this week, I've been having people speak to me about this congregation and about the strength in it. Your zeal, your strength, your maturity is something that has a good reputation. And up north of the Mason-Dixon line, repeatedly, I've just heard references. Like somebody say, hey, I hear you're going to Broadmoor. And then they start talking about the good work here. And I've also heard that you've got a lot of young families and young kids, and that's very exciting. And I really appreciate your interest in the topic of the home and the family. It's a topic that's dear to my heart, and it's important for our God, and I appreciate your being willing to take the time this week to focus together on it. And I just commend you for the good that you've done and the good reputation that you have. Most of you I don't know. Some I do. Norm and Renita I have known ever since we were in college together, and over the years I've been very impressed with their children and the things that they have been doing. Matt, in particular of late, has been up in Pennsylvania, and I've been really excited to see the group get started over there at Pittsburgh and their other children as well, and I have a great appreciation from them. Mike Roy and I have not seen each other over the years, but it's good to see Mike, and I said he looks the same as he did back when we were in school. I don't, but he does. And others of you I have not met before, but I've heard of you by reputation, and it's a real pleasure to be here with you. Zach Deuce, I see it. There it is. We're going to be talking this morning about being better husbands. And let me just say two things by introduction and credentials. When I speak on home and family, I do a lot. Most of the meetings that I'm asked to do the last few years have been this topic. And I think in part possibly because I have a bunch of kids. I have six kids. If you have a child, I have a child close to your child's age, or not very long ago, they were your child's age. We got three boys and three girls, and they're all 4 years apart, from 5 to 25. But that's not really the thing that's most important, because the first time I spoke on this topic was down in Decatur, Alabama, and I was asked to go somewhere and teach on it, and I was 21 years old, and I was single. I hadn't been married, and I didn't have any kids. But I went to the book of Proverbs and to the teachings of the New Testament and looked at what the Bible said. And, you know, that's where these principles are. So whether we've had children or not, young people, you can be deciding now what kind of family you want to have. In fact, if you want to have a good family, be deciding now what kind of family you want to have. And I think one of the discouraging things is when people that aren't doing it well will tell other people, oh, just wait till you have kids. You know, you don't know. What a joy and a blessing it can be to be raising children, and you can do it well. Plan to do it well. Don't settle for the standards of this world. And the other thing I want to say is, other than the scripture, I know there's one point in the sermon this morning that's a really good one, because I heard it from somebody else a couple of weeks ago, and it's really benefited me. It's going to be pretty obvious, but it's really benefited me over the last few weeks, and I will tell you about it when we get there. The role of the husband. Proverbs says that he who finds a wife finds a good thing. We already talked in class this morning about the permanence of marriage. Marriage is to be for life. commenting on Genesis 2:24, Jesus said, "What God joined together, let not man put asunder." We talked about different passages in the New Testament on the subject of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. And Hebrews 13, verse 4, let's read that one again, please. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4. "Let marriage be had in honor among all, and let the bed be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers God will judge." Genesis 2:24 is another passage we talked about this morning. "For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." Leaving and cleaving. There's some challenges really right now, culturally and societally, of young men not being raised to be men. It's wonderful when we have a baby boy or a baby girl, but that baby is not meant to stay a baby. And young boys need to be trained to be men. We've had a society that for a while has tried to act like that there's not a difference between men and women. And you treat, give them the same toys, have them do the same things. And some of it you just can't change. I know one family where somebody gave the boys Barbie dolls and they rather quickly dismembered them and were using the arms and legs for guns. And they were having their little fight. But if you keep corrupting biblical roles, you can end up with some very wimpy, rather feminized men who refuse to take responsibility and refuse to do things that need to be done. Leave and cleave. One of the great things about starting out, and I think it's kind of good sometimes to start out without all the blessings and stuff that you're going to have later. I'm afraid too many of the young men today are just not growing up. They're kind of hitting a peak. Sociologists have even noticed this as a trend, that for years and years and years, they haven't decided what they're going to do, or they don't take this responsibility. They don't take that responsibility. And just kind of an extending kind of an adolescent period far into adulthood. When you leave, when you find that girl and you want to get married, you are now the man responsible. It's not her daddy is responsible. It's not your daddy is responsible. You are now responsible. Don't be running back. "Oh, Dad, can you change the oil in my car? Oh, can you pay for this? Oh, can you do that? Oh, can you do that?" You've got a new family now. You've got a responsibility. Take care of that. Recently I heard about a family. The wife's just recently left the husband, and you can understand why. She shouldn't have done it. She chose poorly, and she doesn't have a right to leave, but she did. But let me describe to you basically the situation. He's not taking much responsibility. He's got a fairly worthless job that doesn't seem to put himself much into, apparently, and such. He just kind of goes to work and comes home to his mother's house, where he lives with his wife in the basement. And then he just stays up late, late, late into the night playing video games. And that's his life. That's not a man. The video games he plays these warrior video games where you go in and you conquer and you defeat. And I assume that when he does that, he's feeling like a man. That's not a man. A man needs to take responsibility. A man needs to care for his wife. A man needs to provide for his wife. A man needs to lead his family. A man needs to do something rather than play like a child all the time. He needs to be man. Leave and cleave. Providing for physical needs. You can see this as a responsibility really in the curses as they were laid down. Look at Genesis chapter 3. Do you remember after Adam and Eve have sinned and the curses are laid down, what areas do they relate to the woman? What areas do they relate to the man? In Genesis chapter 3, we have the curse placed upon the serpent. And then to the woman, notice the curses. Verse 16, I will greatly multiply your pain in what? Childbirth. In pain you will bring forth children, yet your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. Notice that they focus upon the woman and her relationship with her husband and childbearing. Now look at the curse placed upon men. Verse 17. Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, saying you shall not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you. And you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you will eat bread till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken. You are dust, and to dust you will return. Do you notice the focus of the curse placed upon man? As the provider. And whether you are still a farmer, as lots of people have been, or some other means of providing for your family, each job is going to have its own various thorns and thistles that you are going to have to deal with. Now, that doesn't mean that the father shouldn't be involved in the children. He should. Ephesians chapter 6. Who is to raise the children and nurture admonition of the Lord? In that passage specifically it addresses fathers. The father that just says, I'll bring home, you know, and provide for the family, and then that's it. You know, now let me play my video game all night or watch, you know, ball games all night. Don't bother me. And it's not wrong for the woman to help in providing for good of the family in material ways. The worthy woman in Proverbs 31, what did she do? She saw a field, and she bought it, and she made some garments, and she takes them to the shopkeepers and such, and she sells them. So it's not that it's wrong for her to do that kind of work or her to bring in some income, but do you see the focus here placed in Genesis chapter 3? Who's to be centered when it talks about the children and the family relationship? Who's in the center of that? And who is in the center of the responsibility of providing for the family? It is the husband. I mentioned that I've been dealing a lot over the last few years with a lot of young people in some gatherings during the summer where a lot of young people get together. And one of the things I've done in some of the classes is I've tried to get some of these guys to project into the future a bit. And I said, well, you know, when you graduate high school, you know, what do you want to do in college? What do you want to major in? Well, I want to be an architect. Okay, after you, all right, now you've graduated from college. How much money are you making? And they pick a number. I said, and you're getting married. Your fiance over here, you know, what's her name? And he gives her a name. And what's she majoring in? And he picks something for her. And then she graduates. How much money is she making? And he picks out how much money. All right, now you got all this money. You got your money. You got her money. I said, now, you want to buy some stuff? What kind of house you want? And they pick a house. What kind of car you want? And he picks their cars. And what else you want? Maybe he wants a boat or a flat screen. And he starts getting all this stuff. And then all of a sudden I go, well, that's on cue almost, that baby crying. Because at that point, I said, that's, at that time, I go, eh, and I hold up, here's a baby. And he reaches out, and I say, what are you going to do? And in other words, he's just planned a scenario for what has he done. Here's all this income I make, you know, dedicated to her career. Here's all this woman, all this money she makes dedicated to her career, and suddenly there's a baby. Who's going to take care of the baby? And they sit there. One said, well, just leave it at home. I said, no, you can't do that. One said, give it to grandma. That's not grandma's baby. Grandmas can be a big help, and they're wonderful things. Who did God give that baby to? Mom and Dad. We need to put children, the priority of children, in our families to focus more than how much stuff we get. Children need that. I'm going to mention this again later, but just let me mention it briefly now. Have you ever thought about this? How long does it take a cat, baby, a kitten, to become a cat? Not very long at all, a few weeks. Next spring, robin will lay an egg. It'll hatch. How long will it take that little hatchling to be a bird off on its own? Not very long at all. A baby human being, can you walk away from it within a few weeks? Why has God made us so different? That human being is going to be dependent on parents for years and years and years and years and years. Why? I suggest to you that being a human being is a lot more complicated than being a cat or a bird. And God gave us a lot of time, and that time is to be used for training them, not neglecting them while we simply pursue worldly gain. Husbands, provide for the physical needs of the family. Make it possible for mom to particularly have time to be there with them, but then you be there with them as well. And if we don't provide for our own, 1 Timothy 5 says we have what? If we won't provide for our own, we've denied the faith and worse than an infidel. Deuteronomy chapter 6, we see providing for spiritual leadership. Turn over there and look at that text, please. Deuteronomy 6. We mentioned that this morning. And I need to speed up to get through the material this morning, so if you bear with me, I'm going to do that. Verse 1, this is a commandment, the statutes of judgment which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you, that you might do it in the land of which you are going to possess it, so that you and your son and your grandson might fear the Lord your God. One of my goals in life is to have good grandchildren. When I'm older and we're getting together for Thanksgiving, I don't want somebody coming in. I don't want a grandson coming in telling me about his new boyfriend. I don't want a granddaughter telling me about moving in with some guy or that she's had an abortion, or a grandson or either one calling me up and asking me to bail them out of jail. I don't want that. You don't want that either. To get godly grandchildren, we need to have godly children. And what does he say to do? After verse 4, hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. The words which I command you this day, you shall do what? What does it say? Teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and walk of them by the way. By the way, let me just mention, because you maybe, I like the way that y'all have the songs up here. I usually don't put the biblical text up there because I like people to stay in the habit of turning in the Bible to a text, because most of these texts you're already familiar with. But sometimes if there's a text you haven't looked as closely at, you're going to I remember it better where it's on the page when I've turned to it than when I've seen it up there. So usually I'll just have the text up there and be turning to the text. In Ephesians 6:4, we already mentioned that it's fathers are to lead up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. In Ephesians 5:28-25, 28-9, provide leadership generally. And here's something that's important. Submission. Whose responsibility is it? Does the Bible in Ephesians 5 say, husbands, make your wives submit? Is that what it says? No. The husband is the head of the home, and the wife is to be in submission to him. But it's an instruction to the wife. Wives, be in subjection to your husband. The husband needs to lead, but it's the wife that is to choose and respect submission to God and respect submission to her husband and to obey and do that. The leadership is a sacrificial and serving leader. Look there at Ephesians 5, verse 25. And this was mentioned in the song that we sang right before, Faithful Love. Very good choice of song, by the way. Look at this text. How is the husband to love the wife? Husbands, love your wives. How? Even as Christ loved the church. And what? Gave himself up for it. That is the kind of love that we need to have for our wives. It is a sacrificial love. Husbands, our job is to love our wives like Christ loved the church and sacrificed himself for it. What does that tell us about leadership? Well, for one thing, we were not put in the leadership position of the home just so that we get everything our way. Have you ever seen bosses or government officials that treat their position of leadership like that? There are some people that they get in office, and the reason they're in office is not to serve the public. The reason they're in office is what? To get as many lobbyist connections and get as much things their way as they can. As many things named after them as they can. You know, Bob Smith Boulevard, Bob Smith Airport, Bob Smith this. You know, me, me, me. When do we respect a leader? We need a leader to lead and be in charge, but we respect them when they understand it's their responsibility to do what is good for those that they are governing, not simply for themselves. So a fellow that gets married thinks, oh, I get to be the head of the house. That means, you know, I decide this, I decide that, I decide this, I decide that. He's missing something. I'm responsible. I'm head of this house. I'm responsible for this house. I need to make sure it's got what it needs in various ways. I'm the spiritual leader. I'm the provider. And I need to make sure that my wife is receiving the love that she had. I am to love her the way Christ loved the church and sacrificed himself for it. So it's not, I'm here to get what I want. It's not, I'm here to be served. Jesus himself said, I didn't come to be served, but to serve. And you remember what he said when he washed the disciples' feet? He's down on the ground washing their feet. And he says, you don't know what I've done. He's down on the ground washing their feet. He said, you call me Master and Lord. That's right. That's who I am. And you can't be above your master. But where is he? On the ground washing feet. One young husband decided, well, I need to be a better leader, so he decided to start making arbitrary decisions. You know, I don't know what they were, you know. I want my Captain Crunch and Red Bull today. But just whatever decisions they were, he just felt like I should be making. That's not leadership. Is a boss, if a boss is not leading a company, if an owner of a company is not leading the company, is it leadership to come in and say, I want those boxes moved over there? That's not leadership. In a government official, that's not leadership. Leadership is taking responsibility and doing what needs to be done. It's also not, I'm too tired to lead. I'm too afraid to lead. I don't know how to lead. You've taken on a family. You have a responsibility to lead. And if you don't know how to do it, talk to somebody that does and get some help and start being the man of your family. not a selfish dictator, but a provider and a leader that is helping your family have what they need to have. Be the man. This is from something I didn't have time for this morning, so I switched around up here before. It may transition well or not. But I want to get this in on roles, principles. One of the principles, there was some other things we didn't get to either, but one of the principles that's important is understanding the roles that are, such as we've just seen in Ephesians chapter 5. The structure of the family should understand this. First off, God is God. He's at the top. Secondly, the husband is the head of the family, Ephesians chapter 5, Colossians 3. Then the mother is, she is to be in submission to the husband, but she is also in 1 Timothy 5 to rule the household. She is, the children are to respect her, they are to honor their father and mother, and she is to be taking care of things, and she should have the freedom to do that. A wise husband will not micromanage how she rules the household. Paul said in 1 Timothy 5, I desire younger widows to marry, bear children, and rule the household. She's not ruling the husband, but she's taking care of things there. And then you have the children, which are the gift of the Lord, and in Ephesians 6, are to be in subjection to their father and their mother. Now, just to understand this thing on roles, let's suppose you're house hunting, and a realtor says, well, here's a house for sale. And you think, okay, I might go in and take a look at that house, check out the floor plan, and see if it works for me. You might want to do that. What if they show you this house? Are you interested in that house? You're not interested at all in that house. They say, well, it has a nice kitchen. You don't care. It's well insulated. It doesn't matter. There's a problem with that house. That house is upside down. We got a lot of upside down houses. This particular point relates to children, but we could make it as well, women as well. There are houses that are just controlled and dictated by the wife. That's an upside down house. But also, there's a lot of houses that are controlled by the children. You have child-centered homes or God-centered homes. Too many children view the home, the parents, the food, etc., as merely a means to an end to satisfy and please the child. What's grandpa for? Grandpa's for giving me a dollar. What's grandma for? Making me some cookies. What's dad for? To get me what I want. What's mom for? To clean up my mess. What's the dog for? You know, to let me kick it. You know what I think road rage is? I think road rage is kids that threw tantrums that never grew up. They were allowed to throw them, and they never learned not to throw them, and they're still throwing. It is not helping to raise children to let them grow up in a house like this. The child will make his demands and manipulate parents via tantrums and repeated misbehavior. Parents bow to the will of the child in an effort to placate and appease his whims and dissatisfaction or suffer through the increase in strife and conflict when they cannot. It's like a house upside down. The child needs to understand it is not the child is the most important thing. It is God, then the father, then the mother, and then the child, and then the dog. But still treat the dog good. Your home is your castle, men. We've all heard that expression. Protect your castle. Take care of your castle. Lead in your castle. Make it a safe, happy, joyous, godly, secure place for your family. One, even so ought husbands to love their own wives as their own bodies. He that loves his own wife, this is Paul in Ephesians 5, and remember he's coming off that phrase in Genesis 2, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife and they shall become one. Think about that for a moment, and this touches on the point that I benefited greatly from a few weeks ago. There is a oneness there that, of course, the physical, the sexual oneness, but there is also just a oneness of no longer viewing things as here I am and there she is, but one. You're a team. Now listen to Paul in Ephesians 5. Even so ought husbands to love their own wives as their own bodies. He that loves his own wife loves himself. No man ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. My right foot. I've got a problem with my right foot. It's not a big problem, but it's kind of an annoying thing. I like to play ball, and anytime I play ball, I have to stretch that toe. And people that haven't played, they said, what are you doing? Well, I have to stretch the toe because I had some bone build up, and the toe wouldn't go up, and then the tendon shortened. I had them cut out the bone, but they said the tendon will never be the same. So now I always have to stretch it. That's okay. I'll stretch it, and I answer people's questions when they ask about it. Would I like it if that toe didn't have that problem? Yeah. But that's my toe. And I'm going to take care of it. And I'm glad that by stretching it, you know, I may get to the point someday when I won't be able to run or jump. But for right now, if I work with it, I can still use it, and that's my toe. I'm never going to say, you know what? This hasn't worked out the way I thought it was going to be. I'm not in love with that toe anymore. That's my toe. So I'm going to take care of that toe. Husbands, wives, you're a team. You're one. May we sometimes irritate each other or aggravate each other or disappoint each other? Yes. But we are one. Help the other side of that one. Don't let it become two. Keep it one. And on this is the thing that really benefited me a few weeks ago. I was in Upper New York State, right up near the Canadian border, and we were teaching a bunch of kids up there, and one of the teachers was Sue Hall, and I sat in on his class, and he said this. I just thought it was so good. He was talking about headship in different ways, and when he was on The Family, he was talking about the kind of head that a husband should be. The wife is to be submissive to her husband, as unto the Lord. We'll talk about that this evening, as the body is to Christ. Right? Jesus is the head of the church. The church is the body. The husband is the head of the wife. 1 Corinthians 11. He said, the body, if the body says, I'm cold, the head doesn't say, well, I'm not. And I thought that was really profound. It's very simple. But that really helped me out a whole lot. Pardon me. Because so profound I lost the microphone. But I got to thinking, and I'm going to tell on myself here. I don't want you to think I'm the worst husband in the world, because I'm not. But I finally did something I should have done a long time ago. I cook sometimes. You don't have to cook. I happen to like cooking. I like to cook Chinese, so I did that for Bertina and the kids before I left. I do other things for her. I'll take her out. But there was one thing I'd never done for her. Over the years, Bertina likes to walk. I don't like to walk. You know, I like to wrestle. I like to play basketball. I like to work out. I don't like walking. And I remember in the past thinking, walking's kind of a dumb exercise. You know, if you don't get really sweaty, is it really much exercise at all? But she likes to walk, and that's okay. And so she would have these walking buddies, and sometimes she'd meet this, another girl would go to the park, and they'd do the walking trail. Okay, great. And then we were in a homeschool co-op, and during gym class, who will be my walking buddy? And she wrote. Somebody said, I will, and they'd go do their walking and things. And those two things aren't available to her now, and she's mentioned from time to time, you know, that she's not getting to do her walking, doesn't have a walking buddy. And after I heard Sewell say this, a light came on, which should have come on a long time ago. My wife likes to walk. I could be her walking buddy. So I texted her, and I said, when I get back, I want to be your walking buddy, okay? And she let me be her walking buddy, and I really like it. So now every morning I get up, and I look forward to going on a walk with her. And it's not bad exercise, but I'm not doing it for the exercise so much. I'm doing it to spend some time with my wife, and I'm realizing I've been married to her for 28 years, And I could have been her walking buddy, you know, a long time ago. But just thinking about that concept, the way Sewell put that, if the body is cold, the head doesn't go, well, I'm not. Think about your spouse. It doesn't mean that you have to walk with your spouse or this or that, but when we have, the more we have this attitude, that's my flesh, and nourish and cherish it, that makes marriage bloom. And it helps us be in the role of our Savior who served us. Husband, 1 Peter 3:7. Dwell with your wife according to knowledge. Some translations say according to understanding. Look at that text, please. We'll talk about wives this evening. And by the way, Norm, about what time do y'all, I have a feeling we're coming up on, but I'm not used to what time we start. About what time would you usually end?
You go as long as you want.
I think that means I'm already past it. give me a ballpark.
11:15 or so.
All right. We're coming up on that, so we'll get in a couple more points here and not go much past that. All right. 1 Peter chapter 3. After telling wives to be in subjection, it says in verse 7, you husbands, in like manner, dwell with your wives according to knowledge, according to understanding. Jesus understands us, whether we talk to him, whether we've spoken to him in the flesh or not, or whether we've spoken to our Father in prayer or not. Jesus said, when we pray to God, he said, God knows what you need before you ask. Jesus, when he's talking to people, he could be at Simon the Pharisee's house, and he knows what Simon's thinking, and he answers him with a statement. Husbands, we can't do that. So for us to be dwelling with our wife according to understanding, what do we need to be willing and ready to do? Yeah, we're not real good sometimes at guessing. We need to be listening. What is one of the leading complaints that a lot of women have about their marriages? Lack of communication. Foolish women that get on, you've all known women that left their husband for somebody they met on the internet. You think, what was she thinking? Yeah, what was she thinking? And she probably gets what she deserves. But you know what she was probably getting on the internet? Somebody was listening to her. And foolishly, she takes off. Let's be the one, though, that is listening. Weaker vessel, don't have time to talk about that other than just mention, this could mean the fact that usually the man is stronger than the woman. Girl that's been an EMT, we were studying with her the other day, and she was talking about down in Littlestown, there's a case where it's definitely the other way around. Whenever there's a problem there, it's the other way around. But I think this is probably just talking about in subjection. It's in a context where it said, citizen, obey the governor. Servant, obey the master. Wife, obey the husband. I think I could take the governor of Pennsylvania in a wrestling match, but in authority, I'm the weaker one. We've all had bosses where you might have thought you're smarter than the boss, but in the job, if you're the employee, you're the one in the weaker position. The weaker there is the subordinate one. Stop and think about what it's like to be in that position. What if God changed the rules around and just said, we're going to switch it around, and from now until the second coming, wives will be the head of the house, husbands submit. At that point, gentlemen, how important would it be to us, our wife's concept of leadership and whether or not she wanted to be considerate or dictatorial? How would we want to be treated if we were the one in the weaker position? Would we want to be just stepped right over, or would we want to be honored, as the text says? Honor. You husband, in like manner, dwell with your wives according to knowledge, giving honor to the woman as the weaker vessel. Real quickly here, just a few more things. Remembering your vows. Did we vow? A lot of us did. Did we vow to love and cherish? then we got two reasons to do it. One, God says it, and two, we agreed to do it. Let's do it. Homework assignment for husbands. And wives, none of this while I ask this question. Does your wife feel honored and cherished? If you know, yes, she does, good job. If you know she doesn't, then repent and get busy and honor and cherish her. If you're not sure, ask her today. Do you feel honored and cherished? And ladies, if you don't use this as your opportunity to, you know, start throwing jabs. Say, let him know you don't, and let him know what you need and why that's missing, and help him step up to the plate and provide for that. Make sure she feels honored, loved, and cherished. We said we're going to honor. Let's do. We said we would keep ourselves to her and her alone. Let's do. And not just physically, but with our eyes. We talked about the problem this morning of internet computer pornography. There was a kind of an evangelical organization a while back, Promise Keepers. Some of y'all will recall it. A lot of religious men across the country making vows that they would be there for their husband, for their wives and their families. Remember that? It may still be active. Scary thing. There was a survey done. How many of them had downloaded pornography within the last number of 6 weeks or 6 months, whichever it was, I think it was 6 weeks. What do you suppose the percentage was? Among Promise Keepers, 53%. Job said, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look upon a maiden. And Jesus said, if you look upon a woman to lust after her, you've committed adultery already in your heart. Anybody in here has this problem? You've got to get that out of your life. You've got to submit to God and start doing the right thing. And if you have not been behaving yourself, Jesus gave a solution. He said, if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. If you've not been handling having a TV, get rid of it. If you can't handle having cable, get rid of it. If you can't handle having an internet connection, get rid of it. Jesus said, if your eye offends you, if it causes you to stumble, pluck it out. It's better to go without an eye than go to hell. Don't do that to your wife. Don't do that to before your God. Don't do that to yourself. Ephesians 5:28, we already looked at that text. And I need to just click through these because the invitation song is up here. Don't be bitter against your wife. We'll talk about communication we'll move this to Thursday night. Remember to apologize. Every once in a while, you'll meet a man who's just never wrong. At least if you go by the number of times he's been willing to admit it and apologize. There's two kinds of people in the world. People who, when they are wrong, admit it and correct it, and people who don't. That's the two kinds of people in the world. People who don't apologize are not going to be in heaven. We need to admit when we're wrong. And if our kids know we're wrong, some people think, well, I'm not going to admit to the kids I'm wrong. That'll interfere with my authority. No, it won't. When we're wrong, if our kids notice that we're wrong, does it fool people? Why do people refuse to apologize? I don't want to look bad. We already do. When we need to apologize, that cat's already out of the bag. What do we look like when we've done wrong and then we refuse to apologize? It doesn't make us look better. It makes us look worse. I'll just hit these. This is on some communication stuff that we'll talk more another time, but let me just hit these real quick. No, for sake of time, we'll save those to another time. And let's just move on to, if something in particular in this has been something you seriously need to take care of, ask God to help you and ask God for forgiveness if you're already a Christian. If you're not, once you can think about submitting your life to Christ. Ask your wife what she needs in particular areas. Listen to both, but differently. God is in a very different position of our wife. Whatever God says, we have to do. Whatever your wife says, you're to be the head of your wife, but you're to take into consideration her feelings. God's rules make us think better and act better. Your wife can help you understand her needs better. Take time and follow through. And Proverbs 5, rejoice in the wife of your youth. Keep being in love with her. Keep treating her with love. We talked earlier, and if you need help, recruit help. We talked earlier about what love is and it can be learned. I want to just conclude with this thought. Sometimes people talk, but I'm not in love. Well, I don't love her as much as I used to. You know what love is? Think about the words in John 3:16. God so loved that he gave. Love is not about getting. Love is about giving. Give. Love your wife. Love your wife like Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it. Lead your families. Be the man. Thank you for your attention. Let's stand and sing the song selected.